The Best of Our Knowledge explores topics on learning, education, and research. Coming up, humans aren't the only animals able to keep a beat, and we may not be the best at it either. A new study examines the timekeeping abilities of a special sea lion. On today's episode, we'll learn about Ronin and rhythm. I'm Lucas Willard, host of The Best of Our Knowledge. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. A sea lion at UC Santa Cruz has learned a new trick, and it offers a look into the abilities of wild animals to keep a rhythm. Ronin made waves in 2013 when researchers at the Long Marine Laboratory showed her ability to nod her head to music while adjusting to tempos she's never heard before. Now, a new study puts Ronin head-to-head with humans, and scientists found Ronin can keep time more accurately than her human counterparts. I spoke with Peter Cook, a longtime UC Santa Cruz researcher and comparative neuroscientist at the New College of Florida, to learn more.
So Ronin was born in the wild. We don't know what happened in her very early life, but something must have happened to her mother, because sea lions typically are raised by their mother for, you know, at least 9 months. And they need that time to play and get bigger and learn so they can hunt on their own. And well before 9 months, Ronin started stranding, coming to shore in some distress, malnourished, and interacting with humans. And that's actually not that uncommon when baby sea lions are weaned too early. They're really, even if they don't have the robustness and that they haven't learned yet how to hunt effectively on their own, they're still really resourceful, curious, kind of brave creatures. So they tend to go and look for food where they can, which, if you're not full grown and you're emaciated, is probably on the beach, begging for a sandwich, wandering into town, pulling things off the hook of a fisherman. So Ronin kept coming to shore in distress and going into stranding facilities in the San Francisco area. And I'll give you the very short version of this. I mean, on one of those strandings, she ended up in a totally different study I was running at the time out of Santa Cruz, California. And it was a study on the effects of toxic algae, neurotoxic algae from red tides. And Ronin actually served as a control animal for one of those studies, where we were looking at brain and behavior and a bunch of sea lions who were showing neurological symptoms from these toxic algae exposures. Ronin was not showing those, probably in part because she had not been out in the wild eating fish that were bioaccumulating the toxin, because she was not able to forage on her own yet. So she served as a healthy little control for one of those studies. We had brain imaging of her, we had behavior of her, her brain looked nice, she was super smart, she learned really quickly. And then she was sent back and released out into the wild. And she kept coming back in. And at some point they're like, you can't keep stranding and interacting with humans. We either have to euthanize you or place you in a long-term care facility, so an aquarium or a research program. We were looking for a young sea lion at that time. We already knew Ronin from the other study, and so we sort of bid on her. You don't pay for this. There's a whole complicated process for how you adopt marine mammals into managed care. But we essentially bid on Ronin and got Ronin at the program. At that time, she was about 2 years old. And then I spent a good month or two in quarantine with her, where I was just her primary caregiver, essentially just feeding her and training her in all the basics you need to live in a laboratory. You know, how to go to a target pole, how to go to a target, how to hold in place, how to pay attention and listen for commands. Super bright, super curious, super interesting animal. And she came to the lab, the Pinniped lab at Santa Cruz, University of California, to do hearing work. There's a ton of money for studying hearing in marine mammals, because we're worried about how human noise in the ocean affects animals. So at the time, there was no idea that she was going to be this sort of rhythm phenomenon. She was just this really bright young sea lion who come in from the wild and was now going to essentially devote her life to the study of marine mammal hearing.
So Ronin comes to the lab, and you have this new resident, if you will. And when and why did this idea for conducting a hearing study on a sea lion come about? What was the impetus behind that research at the time?
Yeah. So to clarify, the kind of hearing work she was sort of, that pays for room and board still, was, you know, what levels of sounds at what frequencies and amplitudes can she hear and can she not hear? Okay. Different from rhythm. But I was a senior grad student at the time, and I was working at the lab on the weekends. And on the weekends, we wouldn't run normal experiments, so we had a lot of fun extra sessions with the animals. I had a really great assistant who'd recently graduated from undergrad at Santa Cruz, Andrew Rouse, who's still a collaborator and was a co-author on the new paper. It's like, Andrew, we should do something fun with Ronan, something experimental. She's here on the weekend. She's really driven. She's really bright. We have all this extra food and time with her. What should we do? And there was all this discussion at the time in comparative psychology about which animals could or could not keep a beat. And there had been this really influential series of studies on parrots showing that parrots, they're not great at it, but parrots could keep a beat relatively well. They could listen to metronomes or music, and they could move in time some of the time. And before that, we really, most psychologists and most theorists really thought that most aspects of music were unique to humans, that we had somehow evolved them in early, you know, early on in the hominid lineage, we'd evolved to have brains that were sensitive and interested in certain types of complex musical stimuli. And so when parrots showed the ability, people were like, oh, this is really exciting. Humans can do it. Parrots can do it. We don't think anyone else can do it. What do humans and parrots share? Well, they share the ability for complex vocal learning. And so there was a series of ideas that maybe the way the brain changes to support flexible vocal learning gives you rhythm, in essence, for free. Really interesting idea, controversial idea. And lots of people said, oh, I don't know, that's maybe plausible, maybe not plausible. But in science, what you want to do is you want to put it to the test. And so what does that mean? That means take an animal who's not a complex vocal learner and see if you can prove that they have rhythm, basically. We had Ronans. Sea lions are very vocally stereotypic, so they're not complex vocal learners. She's super motivated. She had a really flexible neck, so we thought this is an animal who could bob along to a song. And we thought, we'll just try it. This is a fun project. We'll just do it on the weekends. It probably won't work out, but it'll be a fun training project. And if it does work out, that'd be neat. And so we spent a few months basically just training her to waggle her head whenever she heard a sound. And then we gave her metronomes and sat watching her hidden so she couldn't see us, and just tried to give her fish when her head looked like it was syncing up with the beat. And then all of a sudden, you know, she really had sort of a light bulb moment and got it. And then from there, it was off to the races. We gave her all kinds of different things. And then had this realization that this was probably going to be a pretty serious scientific study and not just like a fun weekend lark.
So for sea lions in the wild, they don't have any natural calls or anything. I mean, we think of animals keeping rhythm. I immediately think of insects or 100%. Birds. So there are certainly animals that call to each other in a rhythmic way, but this isn't the case with sea lions, correct?
No, sea lions do have rhythmic calls. They bark, bork, 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 and it's been looked at, and those calls are very rhythmic. But what they don't do is they don't synchronize the barks with other sea lions. They just all bark. Maybe they try to bark when the other sea lions aren't barking so they can be heard, but they don't bark together. So something that some insects, not that many, but some insects do is they actually produce rhythmic signals and they synchronize them so that they're producing the signals at the same time across a group. That is super rare, it looks like, in nature. Producing rhythm isn't actually rare at all. It's a really important point. It may be a bit counterintuitive at first, but bodies are kind of built to produce rhythm. Walking is rhythmic, locomotion is rhythmic, swimming is rhythmic. Most vocalizations have some rhythmic component, often just because you have to breathe in between vocalizing. There's all kinds of things in nature and biology that force rhythmicity in animal behavior. So production of rhythm is not at all rare. What seems to be very rare is synchronized rhythmic production, right? So like one sea lion barking is just, you know, that's just what we expect in nature. If two sea lions bark simultaneously at the same time over and over and over again, we'd be like, oh, that's rare. And they don't seem to do that. So it's not really the production of rhythm that's unusual. It's the ability to flexibly adjust your rhythmic production to match external signals that are themselves rhythmic, like we do when we dance to music.
This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Peter Cook, a University of California Santa Cruz researcher and comparative neuroscientist at the New College of Florida, about Ronan. Ronan is a sea lion who has been trained to keep a rhythm, and a new study demonstrates her ability to surpass even humans in keeping a beat. So you found out years ago that Ronan has the ability to keep a beat or nod along to music that's being played or a metronome, and
be rewarded with fish and and be able to do something cool, a cool party trick. But how did you then bring it to the next stage? And in the this recent released study that was published just a few weeks ago, where did you up the ante, if you will? What did you want to find out next of what Ronan could do?
For sure. So the original work with Ronan was like 13 years ago. And at that time, after we trained her on metronomes, we gave her all kinds of tests, right? So we trained her up, and we gave her all kinds of tests. We gave her faster and slower stimuli that she'd never heard before, and she got them right away. We gave her music, she got it. We did all kinds of things where we would, you know, drop a beat in the middle of a stimulus and see if she could keep going. And later we even switched the rhythm in the middle of a stimulus to see if she could adjust on the fly. And she basically aced everything we gave her. So she really incredibly convincingly showed the ability to flexibly synchronize her movements with rhythmic sound at a level that no other non-human animal to this day has been shown to do. You really have to go to humans or insects like fireflies, certain species of fireflies flashing together to find that level of synchrony. That was, again, 12 or 13 years ago when we did it. It caused a big splash and people were excited. And I thought at that time that lots of other animals would soon be shown to be able to move in time to a rhythm. And there's been some work in that direction. There's some really interesting primate stuff coming out. But there was not, floodgates did not open. There were not a bunch of animals that suddenly were shown in a laboratory to be able to keep a beat as well as humans or, you know, at a high level. And so more and more attention has sort of fallen on Ronan as the years have gone by because she maintains her status as the sort of avatar of non-human beekeeping. There's no other non-human, certainly no other vertebrate non-human who is as good at synchronizing their behavior flexibly to rhythms as Ronan is. And so people would be like, this sea lion is carrying a lot of scientific weight. And so people appropriately looked very, very closely at her data. And I sort of over the last couple of years, a narrative started emerging where some people suggested that she's really good. She's undeniably doing it, but maybe she's not quite as precise as humans. Maybe she's a little more variable beat to beat than humans are. Humans are quite good at rhythm. This animal is good, but maybe she just isn't doing the same thing that humans are doing. Maybe it's a, you know, there's different ways to keep a beat, and there's the human way, which is really good, really precise. And then there's the non-human way, which the sea lion is the best at doing, and it's not as good and not as precise. Fair suggestion. So we thought, well, what we really have to do is we have to test Ronan against humans. Ronan was not spending most of her days beekeeping. She does other work. She does a lot of scientific work, but not much beekeeping. In fact, for the last 4 years before this current study, she had not even run a single beekeeping session. So it's not like she's sitting there all day long, just bobbing her head to music. She'd done it intermittently over the years. But we thought she is mature now. She's had more experience. And we should test her directly against humans and just see who's the best. And there's one other really important part of that. The vast majority of the data to which Ronan is compared are humans in laboratories pressing buttons with their fingers, right? And that's a very small movement, very fine brain movement. Ronan has to wiggle her whole head, right? She doesn't. You could make her press a button, but she doesn't have a hand. She doesn't have something like a finger. So we thought we want humans to produce a behavior that is motorically similar to what Ronan produces and then really see if they look the same or not. So we tried different things. And what we found was most similar was humans waving their arm and hand up and down. The arm's about the same length as Ronan's neck. The hand is a lot like her head. And the arms use their head kind of like a hand. They grab things with it. So we got some humans. We gave them metronome beats and had them wave their arms up and down. And we had Ronan do this as well. We gave her new tempo she'd never heard before. Unlike a human, we really have full knowledge of essentially everything she's been exposed to because she's lived in captivity for so long. And then we directly statistically compared Ronan's performance against the human performance. In essence, to try to settle this simmering debate of like, is she really as good as a human? And yeah, she's as good as a human. In fact, she's better than a lot of people.
And when keeping rhythm, Ronan, in Ronan's case and in a human's case, you not only have to follow along with a regular series of sound waves or vibration or something like that, but you also have to anticipate the note that's coming next. So in the study where you have, say, a bee at 110 beats per minute versus 128 beats per minute, how quickly was Ronan able to adapt to a new rhythm?
So it's an excellent point you make. I mean, when we talk about beekeeping in humans, we really do talk about rhythmic prediction. And animals who are able to move rhythmically, which many animals can still sort of organize their movements around rhythmic sounds without beatkeeping. But what they do is they lag way behind the beat. It's almost a response. It's like the sound happens, you move, sound happens, you move, sound happens, you move. And that's not the same thing as being able to get into the flow and hit right on the beat. To hit right on the beat, you have to predict when it's going to happen because you need to start your movement before the sound happens, right? Exactly. When we give Ronan a new stimulus, and every time after her initial training that we've done this, when we give her a new regular beat at a tempo she hasn't heard before, it takes her like essentially one or two beats before she's right on it. And essentially what I think she's doing is as soon as she hears the sound, she starts bobbing her head and she knows I was ahead of the beat, I was behind the beat, I was on the beat. If I was ahead of the beat, I got to slow down. If I'm behind the beat, I got to speed up. And if I'm on the beat, great, I'll just keep moving at this rate. So it really, her adjustment is incredibly fast, literally within a beat or two, even with stimulation she's never heard before.
Now, while Ronan had to go through somewhat of a learning process and training initially to be able to bob her head to music in the study in more than a decade ago, what do you think that the latest study tells you about the ability for sea lions to learn? And clearly there's something inside of the animal's brain that allowed Ronan to pick this up. But what does this tell you about how she may have be able to learn if she were a wild sea lion about the world around her?
Yeah, great question. So something I get asked all the time about these studies is, well, sea lions don't listen to music in the wild. So why are they able to do this? And why? How is this useful? And how does this help us understand anything about animals, including sea lions? And it's a totally fair question. The way I think about it is this, and there's two parts. First, the sort of learning side, and the second, the kind of natural behavior side. So let me break those into two. First, as you said, it was over a decade ago that we collected the data initially, and then we came back and revisited, and she was better than she was when we first tested her. When we first tested her, she was two and a half. That's like a kid for a sea lion. They hit maturity around 5 or 6. Now she's 16. Some of this data was collected when she's 15, I believe. So that's like a mature, kind of healthy middle age, like she's in her prime. What happened between 2 and 15? There wasn't a ton of training. There was some. I mean, there was a ton of training on other tasks. There wasn't a ton of rhythm work. There was just a little bit. It wasn't grant funded, so it didn't pay her room and board. Well, one thing that happened is that her brain matured, right? So we see this in humans. Human babies, fresh out of the womb, are interested in music. Like if you play the musical stimuli, they show interest in all kinds of different ways. They can't move in time to music, though. They don't have the motor control for it. Human kids, toddlers, I have a three-year-old right now, play music, she'll bounce all over the place. She's not really on beat, and studies bear that out. People don't always have an intuitive sense of this, but when it's been studied, humans don't really get good at beekeeping until they're like 10 years or older. We are very interested in music, and we move to it from a very young age, but the precision required to predict and keep hitting the beat reliably without a lot of noisy, you know, arrhythmic movement, it really takes time to develop that. Some of it is practice. Humans listen to music all the time, and we have all kinds of rhythmic games and rhythmic instruction, even informally in essentially every culture. But some of it is also just maturation of the nervous system. Brains get better at producing smooth, well-timed movements as you age. And that's true in sea lions, but it's also true in humans, right? So we initially were comparing a little kid sea lion to adult humans. We were comparing a little kid sea lion waggling her head, who'd been trained, started training a couple of months ago, to adult humans with decades of musical experience pressing buttons, which is maybe not a fair comparison, right? Ronan got older, her nervous system matured, she got better, okay? That is probably not specific to rhythm. That's just about complex tasks. Some of them are easier to do when you get older. What does it mean, though, that like a sea lion can do this and got better at doing this with minimal practice after the initial training? What does that equip a wild sea lion to do? I mean, this is conjecture, but the way I like to think of it is that rhythm is a fundamental part of human music, but rhythm is not unique to music. Rhythm is really just a pattern in time, right? And like nature produces tons of patterns in time, waves on a beach hitting in a certain rhythm, animal locomotion moving at a certain rate, the wind going through the trees and the trees going back and forth at a certain rate. Nature is full of predictable patterns in time. If you have a big complex brain and you're a big complex animal, like a mammal, presumably part of what your brain can do is identify and learn patterns in your environment. If you can learn the patterns in your environment and you can use those patterns to make predictions about what's going to happen next, and you can use those predictions to shape and guide your behavior, it could be really, really, really effective tool for interacting with your environment. Say you are swimming in the waves and you need to organize your flipper strokes so that they are most energetically efficient in terms of the wave timing. Or say you're chasing a fish and the fish is undulating rhythmically and you're trying to predict where the fish is going next so you can catch and eat the fish, right? You can play this game all day. There's so many circumstances where recognizing a rhythmic pattern and acting based on what you believe is going to happen next could be almost, it's almost like precognition. It's almost a superpower, right? That's something I think certainly birds and mammals have in varying degrees across many different domains of sensation and cognition. And I would say Ronan's ability to beekeep is probably not because sea lions have some secret evolutionary history related to music, but it's probably because they live in a really complex environment. They're really adaptable animals and they live a long time and they have to learn to flexibly interact with their environment to get what they need. And if you don't, you die. So there's pressure, right? It's a evolutionary arms race to be able to predict what's going to happen and act based on that prediction. I don't think sea lions are probably the only animals that can do that by any stretch. They may be, you know, particularly good at it.
This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. Peter Cook is a UC Santa Cruz researcher and comparative neuroscientist at the New College of Florida. We're speaking about Ronan, a sea lion and a longtime resident at the Long Marine Laboratory, who has demonstrated astonishing timekeeping abilities.
And you had mentioned earlier the recent studies that studied the ability for chimpanzees and orangutans, primates, to be able to produce and reproduce a rhythm as well. And so that's got to be rather exciting to have put in all this work for so many years with Ronan, well, years ago, and then revisit it a decade later and see more cutting-edge research with other kinds of animals. How does it feel to see that come out almost at the same time as your research?
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. And I think when I think of kind of the big take-home message of our new study with Ronan, it really is that animals can do rhythm. I don't think it's just Ronan. I think there are various reasons why she has been better at it than other animals we've checked. But animals can do rhythm. And if we want to understand complex animal behavior over time, rhythm is one of the things we should be looking at and trying to understand a different species. There's tons of cool work in primates now. I mean, there's stuff in the wild with them drumming on trees, roots, which is very interesting. In the laboratory, something that has really emerged over the last year or two is that even monkeys can keep a beat, but they're not very good at doing it with sounds. What they're really good at doing it with is visual stimulus. So like a flashing metronome instead of a ticking metronome. If you give a monkey a predictable visual signal in time, they're pretty good at synchronizing their behavior with it. You know, why is that? I mean, you can conjecture. Monkeys are very visual animals and they interact with their environment in a very sort of visual motoric way, swinging through a tree, thinking of, you know, using a tool. So it may be that for different animals, different domains of sensation are better for rhythmic behavior than others, right? Maybe auditory is really good for sea lions. We haven't tested visual on sea lions. Maybe visual is really good for primates. Maybe it'll be something else, touch for some animals, right? But it is a good feeling to think that this one sea lion who we started studying is, you know, again, it's a fun weekend project. It's really been kind of a wedge to open up this whole set of questions in not just comparative music science, which is super fun and interesting, but also really just biology writ large.
And you're leading me to the next question, which is, where is Ronan's work going next? And what are you interested in learning? Are you going to be working with Ronan in the future, exploring her ability to keep a rhythm?
For sure. So, Ronan is already collecting data on a new project, actually a couple of new projects. And you know, we'll talk more about those when we put that data out into the world a little ways down the road. But I can say that as we've now shown, I think pretty convincingly, that she is able to move in time to a beat. She can do it with metronomes, she can do it with music, she can do it slow rates, fast rates, she can do it as precisely and accurately as a typical human, if not better. What's the next question about rhythm and Ronan? Well, she is still the best non-human beekeeper. And what kind of questions can we ask her? The thing we are really particularly focused on, I think, in the near future is, what about patterns in time that go beyond the regular? So we always give her isochronous, we call them stimuli, which are just regular in time, like a metric, tick, 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 tick. But humans also are interested in and interact with rhythmic patterns that are not just steady in time, right? We're interested in things that speed up, things that slow down. We're interested in things that have nested complex patterns, short and long, or fast and slow, all in the same rhythm. Can a non-human animal learn, predict, and synchronize the movement with those kinds of patterns? That's really the next horizon of questions we're asking with Ronan.
And quickly, Peter, does Ronan have a favorite song?
It's very difficult to say what her preference is. We never run an explicit preference test. But clearly, two things. One, she's never not been motivated to do this task. As soon as we set up her bobbing ramp, she rockets out of the water and is locked in and wants to bob. She seems to find this a very engaging and interesting task, whether it's metronomes or whether it's music. That said, the stimuli that seem to have gotten the most kind of dynamic, fluid behavior out of her are some of the first things she listened to back during the original training and testing, which is live recorded studio music seems to be more interesting to her than like things like electronic music. And she particularly showed strong affinity for disco. I can't say for sure whether that is fundamentally representative of her core preference, but off the cuff, I mean, it looks like she really likes disco. I mean, her best song is Boogie Wonderland.
Wonderful. Well, Peter Cook, thank you so much for taking the time and speaking with me. This is fascinating. I appreciate it.
For sure. I appreciate your time and interest.
Peter Cook is a UC Santa Cruz researcher and comparative neuroscientist at the New College of Florida. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. If you'd like to tell The Best of Our Knowledge what you think, send us an email at knowledge@wamc.org. You can listen to The Best of Our Knowledge anytime as a podcast, downloadable wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to catch up on past episodes or hear more WAMC National Productions programs on the news, academic study, books, women's issues, the media, and the environment, visit wamcpodcasts.org. This has been The Best of Our Knowledge, episode 1808. The Best of Our Knowledge is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. Thanks to associate producer Madeline Reynolds. The latest on all national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter and our flagship station's website, wamc.org. Until next time, I'm Lucas Willard.